Hello and welcome to the Man Panel. I'm your host, Michelle Marchant Johnson, also known as your guide to the right guy. And I'm really excited about this series featuring real men who are going to give you important insights into the hearts and minds of men so that you can enjoy happier and more successful relationships and have a deeper understanding of men. And this event came about as a result of your requests after other events that I had done, requesting to hear from more male experts. So I'm really excited about bringing this to you, and have gathered a wonderful panel of male experts to share their wisdom, knowledge, experience, and expertise. I'm thrilled to welcome our guest today. His name is Ken Bechtel. Welcome, Ken.
Thanks, Michelle. Great to be here.
So happy to have you here. I'm excited about our conversation today. I know it's going to be a lot of fun. And before we get started into what I think is going to be a very interesting conversation, I just want to share a little bit more about you with our audience.
Great.
And then we'll get started.
I like it.
Ken Bechtel brings you stories of the world's relationship experts' triumphs and trip-ups in partnership as the host of the Speaking of Partnership podcast. For over 15 years, he has shared his insights and amusement as a speaker and educator to help women and men understand and appreciate each other so they can develop deep connections and healthy lifelong relationships. So Ken, before we get started into the meat of our conversation today, I wonder if you would be so kind as to just share a little bit more about yourself personally. I just kind of read the professional biography here, but a little bit about yourself personally and how you found your way into this wonderful work you do in the world.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I live in Boulder, Colorado with my partner Anna and our dog Mikey. Who you may hear in the background at some point. I don't know what he's going to do. But I got involved in this actually, I guess it's just at 20 years ago, shortly after I moved to Boulder, Colorado. I got introduced to some work around spirituality that introduced me to the male and female aspects of ourselves. And everyone that I was interacting with kept asking me to teach classes around the masculine and feminine or male-female communication or relationships. And it quickly occurred to me that I'd actually been getting asked questions about relationships ever since I was in the fourth grade. My older brother's friends would come to me and say, you know, hey, we're dating, you know, whatever dating is in sixth grade. And, you know, what do we do about this? And somehow I had answers for them. And so this has always been a part of my life. It just never really showed up until I got much further along. And that's continued. It was something I was always interested in. And that's how I got to where I am today.
That's great. So Ken, did you come from a place of struggle in relationships, or did relationships kind of come naturally and easily for you? Because one of the things that I've noticed, at least in my own case and in the case of many of the other experts that I've been privileged to interview, is some of us have had our own long and winding journey into finding successful success in relationships.
No, that's a great question. And you know, I just turned 50 years old. And when I was a kid, I was so shy. I literally would introduce myself as, hi, I'm Cy, because I didn't have a clear speech. I had a speech impediment. And my dad's best friend thought my name was Simon for years. Until one day he asked my dad, how's Simon doing? He's like, who's Simon? And he goes, your boy, Simon. There's Tim, Steven, Simon. He goes, no, he says he's Cy. He means he's shy. His name's Ken.
Oh.
That's how shy I was.
So
relationships have not come easy to me. They were terrifying. And on top of that, I found that I had some blind spots where I was actually, I convinced myself due to a number of circumstances growing up that I was totally in love with her. And so what I do is manifest people into my life that felt the same way. They weren't open to being loved either. So one of us or the other one of us in the relationship would always hit our threshold of how much love we could have, and then we'd leave. It was like our fatal pattern that killed every single relationship I had. So no, this was not an easy track, not at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wondered about that because I've seen that as a theme with many of us that are involved in this kind of work.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about what we're going to chat about today. And I think this is something that's going to be really interesting and relevant to this audience of women. And I thank you, Ken, for the things that I know you're going to share.
Sure.
And the topic we're going to talk about is follow your yes and stop chasing your maybes. So first of all, tell us a little bit more about what that means and what you have in mind in terms of this conversation.
Sure, yeah. What I mean by follow your yes is your internal guidance. We all have some kind of intuition or guidance or you know, gut feelings that we get when we're interacting with someone, whether we just met them or we see them on an online profile or whatever it is, but oftentimes we disregard it. It's so common now in our culture that there's so much work that people are doing around being a partner and finding the right person for them and so on, that we get caught up in the strategies and all the techniques, and we disregard what our body's telling us, what our instincts are telling us. And so that's what I mean by follow your yes, because it's one of the things that I've seen in 20 years of working with couples and relationships is most commonly disregarded. We're so caught up in our heads. We're constantly just analyzing and using all those techniques and things we've read in our books and on classes that we're disregarding that inner guidance. And I interview people around this on every single one of my podcasts on Speaking of Partnership. And every one of the experts has said, oh yeah, I totally blew past my instincts, my yes, didn't pay any attention, I had a train wreck. And then they can also reflect on a time when they paid total attention to it and what a huge payoff it was. So that's what follow your yes means, because when we're in our analyzer and we're just thinking our way through things, we blow off those things that are saying, that doesn't look so good. And that's what following our maybes is. When we chase a maybe, it's a train wreck. Because a maybe is actually, it's a no that we wish was a yes.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't really maybes. Maybes are false perceptions. It's really a no that we go, oh, but I wish it was a yes. It's a maybe then, and I'm going to disregard things that don't work, and I'm going to think about these things I can make happen for them, and I can help them change this and this and this, and then there'll be a yes. So it's much easier if you just focus on the yeses from the first place and don't put all that time and energy into chasing maybes.
Yeah, so it occurred to me that maybe the maybes are things like what I might call when we're in a state of fantasy. So you're saying we want it to be a yes, but it's really a no. But these are the kind of relationships we might continue to invest in, thinking things like, well, if I give more, if I am more, if I show more love, if I invest more, then this man is going to step up and be there for me in the way that I hope. Or if I stick in there long enough, even though he told me maybe he's not ready for a committed relationship, he's going to change his mind. That might be an example of the maybes that we're talking about.
Yeah, that can be one form. Usually what happens is the maybes are attached to form. So when we think our perfect guy has to look like this or have this kind of career or have a home or have this kind of car, this kind of education, those are all forms that we've just decided that's what it needs to be the right person for us. Well, what happens then is when, oh, well, you know, he didn't go to the kind of school I want, but maybe that's okay and I can make this work or that, make that work. Or we disregard them altogether just because they didn't go to the right school you went to, instead of going, what if that doesn't matter? What if he's the most intelligent man I've ever met, even if he didn't go to college? Maybe he never graduated high school. So it's getting past those forms and getting into kind of the essence. What's behind that? In other words, what does that make you feel? One of the things I do with my clients is I play a game called If I Had $1 Million. And the idea behind it is when we think about having $1 million, there's a feeling that comes from that, like, oh, that would make me feel secure, that would make me feel free to do this or safe to do that. All these different feelings come up that really aren't attached to the number. But we get attached to the number, or in the case of dating, we get attached to the appearance or the education or the field they work in or their religious background. So that's really where we get attached to these maybes, where we're trying to either make them into something they're not, or we're disregarding them because they don't fit this very structured form box we've created.
Mm-hmm. So the form box is the stuff that's going on in the head.
Yep.
We're analyzing and saying, this person is or isn't or looks like what I thought or what I expected or what I think I want.
Yep.
And you're saying one of the keys to being more successful and being clear about what our real yeses are to be in touch with more of our feelings and our body. We're just trying to get clarity and understand this more deeply.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. When I interviewed the founder of eFlirt, which is a service that helps women with their dating profiles, and they've helped lots of women find their partners. And the founder told me that virtually every person that ended up finding their partner and marrying the partner that they met through their service, when they first looked at their profile, said, he's not my type.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were so attached to the form. But when they opened up and said, well, I'll give it a shot. And she said it was the same for her. She had a specific idea of what he had to do, what industry he had to be in, where he needed to live. She was in New York City, had specific things. Her husband is none of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would agree with you. I've had that happen with a number of my clients where initially when they met someone online or in person, they thought, this is not my type. This is not my guy. He didn't look or appear exactly as they envisioned. And yet once they got to know this person on a deeper level, their heart and character qualities and who they really were, the attraction grew. And in fact, I just got an email today from one of my clients that I worked with last year until she got into this really great relationship. And she said she was engaged. And as I thought back, she did say this when she first met this guy. She said that she wasn't really that attracted to him, that she didn't think he was her type.
Yep.
Well, now she's head over heels in love, and they're building a house together. They're planning a life together. They're getting married, and she's over the moon excited.
Nice.
So it's so interesting because so many women, and I know this happened for me too, I felt like my picker was off for a period of time when I was single.
Yes.
And sometimes I'll hear women say things like, well, it's the same guy, different face, right? Or whatever.
Yeah.
So do you feel like this is the root of that, of what's going on when that sort of pattern occurs?
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on something else when people are doing online dating. So if any of you watching this are doing online dating and you have such a strong picture, again, an attachment to form based on the photos they sent, based on what it said in their profile, that you meet them and you get jarred by the fact they're not exactly what you already envisioned because you've projected into the future. Oh, he looks like this, he's got that. And then you meet him and he's like, yeah, I sold the boat. And you can tell I put on a little weight or whatever. And you shut him off because he's not that form you've already become attached to before you ever met him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very easy way, especially in online dating, where we do this. We shoot ourselves in the foot before we even get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I can remember one of my clients saying, well, he has a dog and I like cats, so it's not mm-hmm. going to work.
Yep.
So that's the kind of thing you're talking about when you say shoot ourselves in the foot before we even get there.
Yeah.
So tell us, I understand conceptually this idea of being more in tune with our body. And I also understand this idea that you're conveying about not being so focused on a type or an idea. What else can a woman do to really get to her true yes? Because I do think this is confusing and challenging for a lot of women. I know it was for me. I mean, I look back on some of the characters that I dated and think, what was that about? What was I thinking? Thankfully, I met and married an amazing man, but boy, the journey along the way and some of the detours I took, it almost seems like I really had lost my way for a period of time. So I think, I don't think I'm alone.
Oh, no, not at all. And it's the same for men. You know, we're out there attached to a form too. And so if we're not paying attention, we'll miss it. The biggest thing to answer your question is pay attention to your feelings. Women are amazing at recognizing their feelings, but oftentimes in our relationships, we put those aside. Because either he looks like what I'm supposed to be finding because of, and by the way, ladies, if you ever hear yourself either in your head or out loud saying, I should like this guy or he should be a good match, it's a lie. Should is not your truth. Should is outside information informing how you're behaving. So if you hear should, go, wait a minute, check that. What am I really feeling here? because we get so distracted by all the things we should be doing or the type of man we should be finding or looking for that we miss what we're really looking for. And it is kind of complex in the sense that we've been trained in the opposite direction of what works our entire lives. Virtually everything in the media, everything you read on dating sites, it's actually funny because when you look at like dating information, ask yourself, is your goal just to have a date? Because that's what they're guiding you towards, how to get a date. Very few people are offering you information on how to build a partnership. And yet when I talk with women, they're saying, oh yeah, I want this partnership. I want a long-term relationship. I want someone to share my life with. That's not a date. Date's very short-term. It's very surface. So if you're really looking to build a relationship with someone, you got to get honest inside about what are your feelings? What do you need? What's the purpose of that person in your life? And don't be afraid to own it. If you want to have a family, a lot of women will hold that back. Oh, I don't want to scare him off. Well, let's think about this. If you want a family and you're going to scare him off by telling him that, wouldn't it be better to do that sooner than later? It's scary. I understand that. But the sooner you can do it, the sooner you can get on to somebody who does want a family. And here's what happens. When you own what you're passionate about or what your interests are, like, I want to have a family, you could be out with a gentleman and he's like, hey, I just know that's not me. You know what? I know a great guy who would love to have a family. Would you mind if I introduced you? And this literally happens because they want you to have what you're looking for, but they also know it's not them. Mm-hmm. So give them that opportunity to either own, hey, yeah, that's fabulous. Me too. I can't wait. I actually know someone, they told me when they first met their, well, now spouse, they told them, you know, I would love to have more kids. I have one child from my first marriage and I would love to have more kids. And they actually said, I want to have a daughter. And the guy sitting across from him said, you should actually have two. And I want to be the person that helps you with that.
Wow.
What if she'd never said it?
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I think it feels very scary and it brings up this concept of vulnerability, which is a whole nother topic. But I really believe there is power in not only knowing and having clarity about what it is you really want for your life, and specifically for today's conversation in terms of a relationship, but being able to speak that, own that, articulate it. And yet I do think that feels really, really scary and really, really risky to a lot of women to be able to express that. And there's almost like some kind of embarrassment or shame or something around this for some people. Like in my generation, you and I are about the same age. So in my generation, you know, we're a generation of women that had greater opportunities professionally to do a lot of things, to explore the world in different ways than maybe generations of women before had. And all of that is good, but it's almost like we wear this badge of honor that says, I don't need anyone. I am self-sufficient. And so there's almost like some kind of weird shame or embarrassment around really speaking or articulating or claiming what you really want deep in your heart.
Yeah. And you mentioned something very important is, you know, as women have had more opportunities and they become very successful, and I'm sure a lot of the people listening are very successful in their lives, one of the things to remember is I often hear this from my clients of, oh, men are intimidated by powerful or successful women. I just talked with someone today that said that exact same thing. I said, well, be clear, we're not intimidated by powerful and successful women. We're intimidated by women who want to be the best man in the room.
I like that.
And if you're trying to be, because that's part of what the corporate culture has asked of you, mm-hmm. is to be more in your masculine. And so if you're bringing that into your relationship, you're likely to you know, he's going to be like, where do I fit in? There's already a guy in this relationship and it's you. So I don't have a spot. Now you can be a very powerful woman in your femininity and guys will drool all over it. It's like amazing because honestly, it's not common anymore. I dated a woman named Marianne, and she told me one day, well, actually what happened was I was supposed to meet her, and she was late from work, so she called me and says, hey, I need about 20 minutes to kind of, you know, put myself together and transition. Can you come over in a half hour? And I'm like, oh, sure, because I was about to leave for a place. And she goes, by the way, you don't want to meet the work me. And I was like, I didn't really know what she meant by that, but I was like, okay, great. So anyhow, we went out. Well, a couple weeks later, she forgot to call me, and I was literally at her door like a minute after she got home. I didn't recognize her.
Really?
I was like, are you okay? Is something wrong? And all of a sudden she starts laughing. She goes, oh, this is work, me. I told you didn't want to meet. Mm-hmm. And she's a partner in a large medical facility. So she's a very powerful and successful woman. And she's like, I know this isn't what I want to bring into my partnership. And thank goodness she was aware of that. But a lot of us aren't. And that's what creates that tension. And that's what creates that quote unquote intimidation. Because you're not showing up as you as this powerful feminine woman. You're showing up as you as I'm this powerful, successful man in a woman's body.
Mm-hmm. So for those women that are in that category, and mm-hmm. I know myself, I have been there.
Yeah.
I worked in corporate America for 20 plus years in some fairly high level positions. And what worked for me very well in that realm didn't work so well in my love life. And even though I always thought of myself, Ken, as being very feminine mm-hmm. in appearance and certain things, some of the ways I was being, I know were not feminine, and I think came across as being competitive with men. And so you're giving this wonderful example, but how else can a woman who is successful in her career and who is very proud of her accomplishments and what she's done, how else can she show up, or how else can she inspire more of a romantic chemistry rather than this competitive, or like as you called it, best man in the room dynamic?
That's a really great question. And there's a couple of things that come to mind. The first one is, if you actually look at how receptive you are. Because one of the things that happens is, and I've had so many men tell me this, where they've dated women who they couldn't see where they fit in your life. Because you're like, I got everything handled. So if you're somebody who does, maybe you do, maybe you have your own home and everything's taken care of and you don't need a guy to like fix things in the house or whatever, that's great. What you're gonna wanna do is let him know what you do need him for. You're like, I don't need you to like take care of the car or whatever. I've got people that do that, or I do it myself. But I can't rub my own back. I can't cuddle up with me. I'm looking for that level of companionship. That's what I need you for in my life. Because what happens is, as guys, we tend to look at that first layer of walk into your house and we're like, huh, how can I fit in and contribute around here? How can I make your life better? And if everything looks fabulous and there's no room for that, we don't necessarily think of those, even though we know that's what our relationship's about. We don't think of that on the first level, and we'll dismiss like, well, there's not really a spot for me. And a way you can notice this is you'll meet guys and you'll have a relationship with them. And when they're parting ways with you, oftentimes they'll say things like, well, you need somebody who can make you happy. You need somebody who can do these things for you, because they don't see how they can do that. Because if a man doesn't believe he can make you happy, he has to leave, because he's compelled to contribute to you in some way to make you happy. And if there's no spot to do that, he doesn't see where it can go on. And he's so compelled, and compelled means much more than wants to. He doesn't have a choice. He's hardwired to do that for somebody he's emotionally connected to. So when he does that and there's no receptivity, it's hell. He's got to get out of there. And that's why men say those things like, you need somebody that can make you happy. If they don't feel they can make you happy, they will actually remove themselves to keep from keeping you having a happy life. That's how compelling it is for them. Mm. So here's where you can check if you're receptive. This is so easy, and we do it all day long. We don't even know it. There's three words that most women say repetitively throughout their day. Not even thinking. It just comes out. And it's, every time you do it, you're pushing somebody away. I got it. Every time somebody offers to do something for you, can I get that for you? No, I got it. You need help with the door? No, I got it. Every time you say, I got it, you've basically said somebody offered you a gift and you refused it. And we all know if you're offering gifts and people aren't accepting them, you're not going to do it for too long. You're going to take your gifts somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So watch that for yourself. It's amazing. Every time I talk about this, I'll have women come up and literally before they leave the room go, I've just heard myself say I got it three times. And oftentimes it's to women. We don't receive, which is irony, because here's a part of femininity. one of the strongest qualities, natural qualities of femininity is receptivity. And yet it's been trained out of you. The good thing is it's still there. It can be trained back, but you've been trained not to be receptive because it's weakness. It's not showing your power. And that's all false. So the more you can be receptive, the more it lets men know where they fit in your life and how they can actually be a partner with you.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're talking about this, because I think it's one of those things that's probably almost impossible to overemphasize.
Yeah.
In fact, Ken, I would say I've had a couple of clients that said this one principle of what I like to call graciously receiving, this receptivity you're talking about,
yes,
literally transformed what was possible for them in their love lives. And I think that women don't always recognize, and you emphasize this very well, how hardwired men are to, like you said, come into your house or into your life and say, okay, where do I fit in here, or where am I going to be able to make a difference? And how satisfying it is to them when they know that they can and it's appreciated, right?
Yes.
And so one of the things that I think we as women often miss, and you can, I'm sure, speak to this as well, is that we don't recognize how powerful that is. And so what often happens is we as women, we start giving too much, too fast, too soon, is how I like to say it. And we can literally take away a man's motivation because we're suddenly right out of the gate doing all the heavy lifting and giving to him instead of leaning back a bit and allowing that space, something that I like to call sacred space, for him to step into. You want to add to that at all?
Well, yeah, there's two components that drive that, because I'll often hear from women saying, you know, well, I'm doing all this in my relationship, why isn't he stepping in? And there's two reasons for that. And this, again, goes back to masculine hardwiring. One is we're hardwired to conserve energy.
Mm.
So if it's already being done, doing it again is not conserving energy. And we're also hardwired to only do things that are very likely to work out. In other words, is this going to contribute to her happiness? Well, she's already doing it, so it will be redundant. So I'll be taking it from her. That's probably not going to make her happy. So we're hardwired. We don't even have to consciously think about it. We'll just go, oh, don't get in there. So what I always tell women is, if you're already doing everything, we're not going to fight you for it. We're actually going to go, cool, it's taken care of. And to you, that's off-putting, because you're like, wow, he doesn't even care enough to do it. No, it's done. If you're actually instead turn around and say, hey, can you help me with this? We love that. Men love to help with problems. You know this, we're problem solvers.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing, and you touched on this, is appreciation. Because appreciation is like the fuel. The way I always look at it is like if you put a pot of water on the stove, right? You're cooking on a gas stove. Well, you as a couple, you get going and it's all boiling water. Ooh, this is exciting. This is good. The appreciation is the gas. So if you turn the gas back, guess what? The water doesn't boil anymore. Men need appreciation to actually fuel their actions. So the more you appreciate them, guess what? That's awesome. I'm going to want to do something else. Anything else I can do for you? When you just go, fine, you should have been doing that anyhow. He's not going to be real inspired to do more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that word inspired. And I think it's really key for us as women to remember that we can inspire our man, considering that if we're dealing with a man who's dealing with us in good faith, we can inspire him by creating those opportunities, allowing that space, graciously receiving, and then showing that appreciation. So I want to swing back to something you said, which I also just love that you brought up, Ken, and that's this whole idea of conserving energy.
Yes.
And I know for a lot of women, they feel frustrated with men because it feels like they conserve energy in terms of how they communicate, how they express themselves. You know, maybe they're going to grunt if you want to have a talk, that sort of thing. And yeah. I know, I mean, I'm a woman, I'm verbose, right? I like to talk, but sometimes my husband, he's, you know, he definitely conserves energy in his language and in his communications. And it's been a shift for me to understand that and him to understand that I sometimes need to talk to get it all out, right? But tell us a little bit more about some of your ideas in terms of communicating, men and women, some of the things we should understand there.
Sure. Yeah, communication is such a huge part of all relationships. And it's funny because when I do work with singles groups, they're always like, it just comes down to communication. And oftentimes it does. However, like you just mentioned, Michelle, we communicate very differently. We have different needs within our communication. So, for example, the masculine, if you ask a guy a question, the feminine oftentimes is going to, if it was you, you'd be responding right away. Well, men have this desire to really know they can stand behind what they say. So they're going to take the time to consider it and go, is this really something I can stay connected to and support? Now, ironically, the feminine has a different need. So part of the communication need with the feminine is connection, because connection makes you feel safe, right? So that pause between your question and his answer feels like the connection was ruptured. And so oftentimes what will happen is you'll interject. Like you'll say, hey, where do you want to go to vacation this year? And he's thinking about it. And you jump right in and go, well, like, I mean, do you want to go to California? Or we talked about Miami at one point, but I kind of would like to go to the mountains. And so he starts thinking about that. And because he doesn't respond right away, then you go, actually, I think it's Miami. We could go to Key West. What do you like, Miami or Key West? And you keep refining it because you think he didn't understand. When really he's thinking about what's the answer I can really stand behind. So what I always recommend for women is if a man doesn't respond the way you do, it doesn't mean he's unresponsive. It simply means he's a man. So you've got to give him the space to consider that, to consider what's my answer here, because I'm going to stand behind it if I say it. Where the feminine will say anything to keep the connection going, because that's safety. It's why you ladies, actually, it's so funny because you will greet each other with compliments. Oh, hi, your hair looks great. Oh, I love your dress. You don't even say hello. You instantly start connecting because that makes you feel safe, right? So this is the key difference. Guys don't do that. Guys might be like, hey, what's up? And they don't say another word because we don't have that same desire, that innate need for connection to feel safe. So let's go back to getting a man to talk more. What you want to do is actually give him that space. And the way I describe it, I've heard from many women that, I don't know if any of you listening have ever had your nails done, nails painted, that the most frustrating and annoying part of that is having to wait for your nails to dry. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there, and if you touch anything, you'll get a snag and you'll ruin it. And you don't want to ruin it because you want beautiful nails. Well, think about it the same way when you're talking to a guy. So you're talking to your man, you ask him a question. Your result that you want is some feedback. You want to hear from him. It's just like waiting for your nails to dry. If you jump right in and start washing the dishes or doing whatever or put your gloves on, you ruined it. Your end result is ruined. But if you wait and you give him time to answer, what he'll do is he'll actually find his answers. And the fascinating thing is he'll tell you more than you ever thought he was going to tell you. Mm-hmm. We will open up when we have the space to. So you want to wait. And wait at least 30 seconds. Yeah, that seems like a year. Actually, with my girl, Anna, we always joke about it when she'll ask me like, 4 or 5 rapid fire questions. I'll just look at her and go, was that 30 seconds? Oh yeah, that was for sure. And it's because we realized, okay, I understand why you can't answer that way, because you're not a woman. So the more you can give your man the space to be who he is and how he communicates, the more you'll get out of him. And likewise, let him know when you just need to talk. When you just need to talk and you don't need any answers, you don't need any solutions, tell him ahead of time. Say, hey, I just need to get this out. We love it when you tell us that, because one, then we can just stay here and listen to you, and that's cool. We don't have to stay going, okay, I got to come up with a solution, because that's my role. I'm hardwired to create solutions. Men are results-oriented. We're attached to results. That's what makes us feel successful and safe. Women are connection-oriented. So you're connected to that safety of connection, constant communication back and forth. Very different ways of communicating. Ultimately, it gives the result that we both need to be our best selves.
Okay. So I'd like to ask you, Ken, I love what you just shared, and I think it's so profound and so interesting. And I want to ask you about a real life situation here. So This is a question that recently one of my clients has encountered. So she's been dating a guy. It's going really well. They really, really like each other. But he's in a period of transition in his life in terms of his career. He's actually retiring from the military and has to have some surgery and has to move. And things are going really, really, really well. But the irony is now there's all of this uncertainty around what's going to happen. And of course, my client, because she really deeply cares for him, really wants something to hang on to. She wants something tangible to hang on to. And recently had a conversation with him. And she said, you know, the only thing that he could tell me is that he plans to continue the relationship. He doesn't know exactly what that's going to look and feel like. Which sounds logical, but in her mind, it feels really uncertain and really unsettling. Now, based on what you're saying here, and I'm asking for confirmation and maybe a little more on this, it sounds to me like I've always had the sense that he's dealing with her in good faith. He's not a player. He's not playing with her emotions. You know, I can usually spot him after my dating for decades that I did myself. But he's dealing with her in good faith, but I think based on what you just said, he's taking very seriously his responses and what he's able to promise. He's really analyzing that in his mind. And so what she might be interpreting as, well, he's not really sure about me, it sounds more like he's not really sure about the situation and what that's going to look like, and he doesn't want to overpromise. Does that sound right?
Yeah, there's actually two things that show up when you say that. And the first is when a man says something about the future, right? Typically what happens is he's speaking of possibilities. Maybe this will happen, maybe that will happen. But the feminine tends to hear it as plans and promises. And so you can be very hurt when he was just throwing out a possibility and you took it as, oh, he's taking me here. Oh, we're going to go meet that person. And he's like, no, I just said, like, you know, yeah, I'm going to be in New York and we're going to be out there. And yeah, my mom's going to be out there too. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, he wants me to meet his mom. That wasn't at all what he said. So some men are very aware of that. And so they're mindful of what they're going to put out there. So they know that you may interpret that as a promise or a plan. So that could be what he's doing. But the other thing from her side that I would say to her is, when you can actually recognize a man, I call it being complete in the moment. And what that means is you recognize that where he is right now in this moment, he's doing the best he can with what he has available. And it's a real challenge for the feminine, because the feminine is about improvement and potential. And so the word complete is scary because it sounds like it's over. That's the finish line. There is no future. There is no improvement. There's no possibility. So why bother? So the reality is, when you can see a man is complete in the moment, you can really go, yeah, you're doing the best you can with what you have available right now. In his case, he doesn't know what the future holds as far as career or whatever their relationship is. That gives him the space to actually move forward. Contrarily, when you don't, when you're like, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? We want to know that. I need to know plans about this. It actually paralyzes the masculine, because we need to figure out what is it going to take to be okay where we are before we can move forward. So if you do that, you've just confined him to, I can't leave yet until I get all this figured out, as opposed to going, hey, wherever you're at right now, fantastic. I get it. I know you're working on things. Fabulous. And whenever you're ready, I want to know what's next. I'm excited about where we're going. And give him that space. He can then go, cool, I've got this one down. Now I can move forward. But without it, we actually get tied up. We get trapped in trying to make it right here before we can move forward. So the more you can see your man is complete in the moment, biggest gift you can give him, and then he'll be able to move forward much quicker for you.
Yeah, I really like that. That was really, really well said. And it oftentimes feels to women like men are not communicating. They're not saying a lot. Maybe there's not a lot of verbal cues, especially in the earlier stages of dating. Yeah. And so, you know, as women, we have to analyze every single thing, every word that was said, everything that happened on the date. Did he like this? I mean, the poor man may be just over there deciding what to do what he's going to order for dinner or whatever, and we're already, you know, we've got a million things going through our minds. Then we analyze it when we get home. We analyze it with our girlfriends. We go through every word that was said. Do you think this meant this? Do you think that meant that? Do you think that meant that? But I guess my question here is that since we don't always have what we consider a lot to go on, how does a woman really assess where a man is coming from, particularly in those early stages?
What do you mean by where he's coming from?
Well, how do we know how interested he is? How do we know whether he's, you know, what he's thinking? I mean, he's not offering a lot. And women want to know what men are thinking. They want to know what's going on. And, you know, we, like you said, we want that connection.
Yes.
And he's sitting there and we're thinking, what is he thinking? And, you know, what I'm wearing. And then we go home and we analyze everything. What do you think it meant when he said this or that? I mean, we drive ourselves crazy sometimes as women.
Yeah, I get that. And I have no problem, what I call outing men on this, is, ladies, what you need to understand, men are the world's worst guessers. We're horrible guessers. When you make a man guess, everybody loses, because 99.9% of the time we're going to guess wrong, which means you're not going to get what you want. So the more you can communicate to him, what do you need? What are you looking for? And I know it's scary, because what if that scares him off? The only reason you have that thought of what if it scares him off is if you're operating from scarcity. If you're believing this might be the only man left on earth, there's 3.5 billion men. I actually did the math one day. This might blow your mind. So the average woman in America lives to be 82 years old now. And if you measure out the number of seconds in their lifetime from birth to death at 82, it's just right at 2.5 billion seconds. So as a woman, you could date a different man every second of your life from birth to death, and there'd still be a billion men you didn't date. There's no lack of men. So having that idea that if I say this, it might scare him away, you should embrace that because it will clear things up. He can sort himself in or out. So the more you can actually just be honest about what you're looking for, let him know, set him up to win. Like, for example, I had a couple I was working with, Rob and Inga, and it was so funny because she asked a great question. She said, well, how come when I come and tell Rob what I want, he gets all disappointed and like I just shot him in the foot? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? She goes, well, like the other night, we went out to dinner and, you know, the kids stayed with the step-parents and it was all good and we went out and had a great time. And I got home and I said, man, I really wish we went dancing. And he just got like all bummed. And every guy in the room when we were doing this, their shoulders slumped and they were like, shh. And I said, well, what if you said, thanks so much for taking me to dinner. That was fantastic. I loved it. And I would love to go dancing too. And he sat upright. Every guy in the room started nodding their heads because they got appreciated first. And she just set him up to win. Guess what he's going to do next if he's not a total bonehead? He's going to take her dancing. She just told him what's a home run. So it's doing this, which is always scary because it feels like, well, what if I said that and he doesn't like it? Or is that, you know, being too needy or too demanding? Not when you present it that way. It starts with the appreciation. Then the man can go, oh, cool. Hey, have you ever thought of this? Because they probably got other ideas, but they want to make sure one works first. Remember what I said earlier. Unless it's likely to work, we're not going to do it. And that's why hints don't work. Women want men to read their mind, but we don't. And if you make men guess, everybody loses.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So I often will tell my husband that he's won hubby points, right? Because I always think about sports analogies with men and all the things they do, running back and forth on fields and basketball courts and things to make points. And so when my husband does something that's very nice or sweet, or just it can be a little thing, I just say, oh, honey, you made some extra hubby points. Well, after 10 years of marriage, when I tell him he's made hubby points, he still puts his shoulders back and looks all proud of himself, even though these are the imaginary points. And so what came to me as you were speaking there, Ken, is that we can, even if we do a basketball analogy, for an example, you know, we can be that, you know, we can pass that ball and give them that opportunity to make that shot and make those points. We can tee it up. We can be the forward or whatever that, or the guard that passes to the forward and helps them to make that shot. We can tee it up for them. We can tee the shot up for them by letting them know what we want, by expressing our wants and needs, and then letting them be the hero to make the shot and then appreciating and thanking them for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that part of just setting them up to win. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, as you develop a relationship with someone, obviously you're going to learn people's preferences. So I might learn that you like romantic comedies, but that doesn't mean that every time you say you want to go to a movie, you want to go to a romantic comedy. So if you just say, I want to go to a movie, you're wanting me to figure out which kind, and I take you to this romantic comedy, you're like, well, I was kind of looking to go to, you know, something like action movie, just for the heck of it, do something totally different. I just failed. Not likely to win. When am I going to repeat it? Probably not. Because I'm so compelled to try and contribute to your life to make it a better place for you, that when I screw up, it makes me go, okay, don't do that again. So the more, what happens when you do that, you're actually training him not to follow up on your hints.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure, just be clear. I know it's not as romantic, but you'll get what you need. He'll be able to provide it for you, and everyone will win.
And we'll both get to say yes. Yes.
Yeah.
You get to say yes because he feels like he won and pleased you. You get to say yes because you got what you wanted, even though you specifically might have helped him out by setting up the layup, so to speak, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Ken, I feel like I could talk to you all day. I'm having such a great time, and this is such a fun conversation. But I know we have to wrap up soon. I wonder if I can just ask you one more question before we have you tell us a little bit about your free gift for the audience. And then I'll also let you have the last word, kind of to leave us with a last parting thought or piece of wisdom. But my question is, I know you have interviewed so many amazing people, so many experts, and I wonder if you could tell us about one or two resources out there that might be particularly relevant or valuable to the listeners on this series.
Yeah, absolutely. For women and for men as well, because the first time I read this, I learned about myself, but it's a book from Alison Armstrong called Making Sense of Men. And what's interesting about it, I had a radio show several years ago, and I contacted Alison, wanting to interview her, and I had only read through her book, but it's a book obviously written for women to understand men, but I learned why I do what I do. Because just like you, there's things you do in your behaviors that you just do them. You don't know why you do them. It's just how you're wired. But she so nailed this that I was like, oh, yeah, that is exactly why I do that. So I can guarantee you the information in there is dead accurate. And I've asked many, many men about it. And the other one I would recommend, and this you can go, you know, you don't have to go buy a book or anything. You can actually go on YouTube and find this. And it's a gentleman named Mark Gungor, G-U-N-G-O-R. And he has a series of videos that you'll find on YouTube. And one of them is male brain versus female brain that will explain a ton of things. But the other one I think is so important is how men and women keep score. Mm. And I always say, if you keep score, everyone's losing because you think you're ahead and they think they're ahead. And so both of you are waiting for the other person to do something to catch up. And it's because we keep score differently. And he explains it beautifully. So that's the two main resources I'd tend you to right now. Allison's book, Making Sense of Men, and Mark Gungor's videos on YouTube.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I love Allison's work, yeah. And I've also been privileged to interview her before, and I just think she's amazing, and can't wait to check out that other resource as well. So thank you so much for sharing those. I'm sure they'll be very valuable. So Ken, you're up to a lot of really cool things, and I want to have you have a chance to tell a little bit about what you're up to in the world and also a little bit about your free gift for the listeners of the series.
Sure. Thank you. Well, as I mentioned, I do the podcast, Speaking of Partnership, where I interview leaders from all walks of life, really, about what are their pitfalls, what are their successes with partnership, how can you learn from those so you don't have to go through them. Amazing, amazing stories. It's all story-based, so it's not theoretical. It's literally what happened in their world. You'll get kind of a peek behind the curtain of these people you've been reading about or working with for years. And it's funny because so many of them have told me, I don't think I've ever told anybody this. We hear all kinds of cool things. So that's a great place to check things out. one of the things that I'm working on, and I don't know if it'll be done yet by the time this goes live, but it's a book called Follow Your Yes and Stop Chasing Maybes, about how you actually apply this. And part of this stems from the interviews that I do with my guests, because I ask them about when's the time you followed your yes and when didn't you. So we're going to incorporate all these live stories of what really happened for experts that you're very, very familiar with. And then the other thing is I've got a program that I call Unlocking Lifelong Love, where we actually apply a bunch of techniques. It's basically 7 steps to figuring out exactly what's getting in the way, what's blocking you. Because most of us have some kind of blind spot, like I was talking about myself. And what happens is it actually transforms us from bumping into the same thing again and again. I keep messing up, to, oh my gosh, I moved right past that. Once you get that blind spot identified and move out whatever was tripping you up and instead put in something that supports you, it changes everything. And that's where you can get to the spot of following your yes, knowing what you need for you, taking care of you and bringing your best self forward so that you can attract the kind of person you're looking for. So that's the main things I've been working on, and I thank you for asking for that. So if you want to check that out, all of it, speakingofpartnership.com. We do webinars, free webinars, every couple of weeks, so definitely check out those and, you know, sign up so you can get on that list. And then the free gift I have for you actually goes back to communication that we were talking about. It's a little ebook I put together that's called How to Get Your Needs Met Without Being Needy. Because oftentimes women will tell me, well, I don't want to ask for things because I'll feel needy, and men don't want a needy woman. Makes sense. However, what women think is needy is very different than what men think is needy. And so you want to check this out because it actually outlines that. And I give you step by step how to ask for what you need in a way that won't show up as needy. You'll never think you're needy by asking this way. So check it out. It's free, and I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ken, for those wonderful resources. And for those of you that are listening, in addition to checking out Ken's Speaking of Partnership site, the link to the free gift is also available right here underneath the video that you're listening to for easy access. So be sure to get that right now. And Ken, I'm going to let you give us the last word here and leave us with the last bit of wisdom or advice. But real quick before I do that, I just want to invite everyone to also please check out the upgrade package for this series. You get access to all of these conversations in addition to some very special bonuses. This is very juicy because it really gives you a deep insight into the hearts and minds of men from the male perspective. And I'm really excited about that based on your request for this. So just go to themanpanel.com/VIP and check that out right now. And Ken, I want to let you give us the last word.
Sure. And I would say, ladies, I would really encourage you to check out the upgrade, and here's why. What you're doing is changing behaviors you've done your entire life. So hearing them once isn't going to work. You've got to reinforce it. You've got to go back and check in and remind yourself, because you're going counter to how you're hardwired. If you want to be in partnership, it requires that you actually understand your partner, i.e. the men, like you're trying to do through these videos, which is fantastic. Thank you for doing that. But you're going to have to check back in, because there's no way you're going to be able to assimilate all this and put it into action with just one path. So I really encourage you to do that. My final comment to you ladies out there is, know that men are not hairy women. We're not doing things on purpose to piss you off. We're doing things for a good reason. It's just a very different reason than you would. And the more you can let us know, like I said, men are horrible, horrible, horrible guessers. The more you can actually let us know what you need in a way that works for you, which you'll learn through the free gift, you will actually get the most amazing relationships you've ever experienced. It's not as hard as you think.
Thank you, Ken. I really want to thank you for a really fun and enlightening conversation today. I've really enjoyed our time together, and I want to thank each of you also for tuning in, and invite you to tune in for more of the Man Panel. And again, check out that VIP upgrade package at themanpanel.com/VIP. Thank you so much, and bye-bye for now.
Peace.